You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Today's show intro was You Got to Run, Spirit of the Wind by Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak. Unceded Airwaves broadcasts every week from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Autumn Chanel Bilgey, I'm Treaty 11 Gwich'in and Anuvi Alouette on my mother's side. I was born and raised on Treaty 6 territory of the Cree, Métis, Nakota Sioux, and Soto peoples. And I acknowledge that I'm an uninvited guest on the Coast Salish lands. I've been here for about 6 months and I'm grateful every day to be here. Do you want to introduce yourself, Melissa?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Melissa Habrill. I am also an unceded guest here on Hunkaminam territory. I am a settler from Epiquette, also known as Prince Edward Island, the traditional territories of the Mi'kmaq people.
Great. We want to thank our sponsors, Decolonizing Water and NORAD Electric. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 7 of Unceded Airwaves, already on Episode 7. That feels so crazy. But today we have a busy show for you all. We'll be talking to Vanessa about their Journal 2.0, and then we have an interview with Michelle Nahaney about her board game, Playing Post-Colonial, a decolonizing activity book for the woke and the weary, and then we will be discussing what it means to be Native enough for a second time. We have an interview with Madison, and then a little video by a person named Luke, who both of them took time to share with us what it was like to be a mixed person. So, yeah. But before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day. We are the Indigenous Radio Collective. Every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. We are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Unceded Airwaves is our opportunity to share and define the diversity of our cultures and highlight some influential Indigenous people.
If you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out. You can always reach us on our social media. We have Facebook and Twitter. And if you have a voice for decolonization, then we would like to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome and there is no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is every Monday at 4 p.m. at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. If you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate in this collective.
You can follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you are aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet using the hashtag UncededMusic or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves and we will do our best to get it on air. And if we play it on air, we will even give you a shout out.
We're always looking to hear from our listeners and what you're up to. So let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show. We'll have our weekly unceded events listings to share a little later in the show as well.
You're a member of CITR and Discorder. But are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts in Kitsilano and around UBC at
On the Fringe Hair Design, Rufus Guitar Shop, Stormcrow Ale House, The Bike Kitchen, UBC Bookstore, Australia Boot Company, and so many more. Is Coco Hamamatsu talking about koi fish in a pond or the youth at CITR and Discorder? Get info on your wares, services, or events directly to students, musicians, artists, and all the coolest cats from Bellingham to Squamish by advertising with CITR and Discorder on air, in print, or online. This can be your reality if you email us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit CITR.ca for rates and packages.
The song you just heard was Kitty Long Past by Mish Kota. For the first show topic of today, Melissa sat down with Vanessa, the First Nations Studies Students Association, about their upcoming journal. Here is what they had to say.
Hello, my name's Melissa Habrill. I'm a settler from Epiquette, also known as Prince Edward Island, the traditional territories of the Mi'kmaq peoples. I'm an editor of the relaunched First Nations and Indigenous Studies Students Association undergraduate journal named Hunaq Olmoq Tsxikhiyls, the Journal of First Peoples Writing. I have a couple other members from our editorial board, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the purpose of the journal and things to be looking out for with the journal. Okay. So do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah. So my name is Beverly Ma, and I'm a third-year student of FNIS and the Environmental Sustainability Stream in Geography. I'm a first-generation Chinese-Canadian living in Vancouver. And I'm also on the board of editors for the First Peoples Writing Journal.
And my name is Joshua Shepherd. I am a third year at UBC studying integrated science and also First Nations and Indigenous Studies. I am from South America and from England, and I grew up in London, Ontario, on the traditional territories of Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee people.
Great. Okay, so what do you guys think is the main intent behind the journal that we're putting out this year?
Well, the JFPW, or Journal of First Peoples Writing, is student-run, peer-reviewed undergraduate journal, exactly just like other journals from the departments around UBC. The History Department has their own journal. The Poli-Sci Department has their own journal. So I think that it's a great platform to give space that centers Indigenous voices, to publish student work, and not just essays and not just like articles, but also creative works of art and poetry.
Yeah, just like Beverly said, we're really trying to open up space at UBC and in the academy to really showcase the amazing work that's going on in decolonial studies and also in critical Indigenous studies. And we really want to showcase how important this work is and really, really try and center Indigenous voices while we're doing that.
Yeah, so a bit of context for our listeners. The journal that we're relaunching this year was once published back in, I believe, 2014. The editorial board then was led by Erica Baker, Samantha Nock, and Chloe Erlinson, who were key to bringing out the journal back then. And so part of the struggle to keep it going is FNIS is a pretty small department here at UBC. So compared to other more established journals, let's say with the History Department or the Political Science Department, where they're really getting to sort of build off previous years, it's a bit more difficult for smaller departments to kind of keep that momentum going. And so kind of back to what Beverly and Josh just said is, we, this year, as a the First Nations Studies Students Association, felt it was really important to recreate that space and to bring the journal back for the reasons that they stated, mainly because there's so much amazing work happening in our department, as well as in other disciplines. and not as much of a platform for folks that want to be talking about Indigenous issues, decolonial concerns and thought and analysis, as well as sort of like artistic ways of communicating those messages. So that's kind of what our intent behind the journal is this year. All right. And so our name, Hunalmoch Skhils, what about that?
So Hunalmoch Skhils, it means Journal of First Peoples Writing. And it is a Hunkamutum name gifted to us by the Musqueam community, specifically Elder Larry Grant, who we had contacted while reviving the submission criteria and just, you know, getting the group of editors together. We contacted him and asked him if we could continue using that name. And he responded.
Yeah, we're really grateful to have the name. I think it's important to have the name of our journal reflect the language of the territory, the Musqueam people, their territory that we're on. And just to sort of honor the community with that. And it's also a huge honor for us to get to carry that name. And we're very grateful to Larry Grant for gifting it to us. So what type of work will be showcased in the journal?
So in the journal, we're not just going to be having academic essays, but we're also trying to really broaden the scope of what we publish in the journal. So yes, there is going to be space for academic papers, but we also want to have space for poetry, for different creative submissions. So literature, poetics, and also along with that, we will be looking for art submissions at some point. And maybe someone else can talk about that.
And just adding on to what Josh just said about sort of expanding the scope of what we would include in the journal, the idea there is though there is really great work being done in academia and, you know, academic papers and stuff like that, that's pretty limited in terms of what you're getting to showcase and what you're getting to sort of communicate. And so the idea with the journal is that submissions are going to center Indigenous issues, voices, politics, ways of knowing, that they'll further decolonial analysis and thought. And so in that sense, that kind of work and those types of messages aren't only going to be communicated in academic papers. And so we really wanted to broaden the scope of what we're including to give that space to people that might want to express themselves more creatively or artistically.
So it's really exciting. We just released our call for submissions, actually, and the deadline for that is January 21st in 2018. And those can be emailed to firstpeopleswriting@gmail.com.
Yeah, so a little bit about the just process of submissions. All the submissions must be sent, like the written ones, must be sent as a Microsoft Word document, a PDF, or a JPEG. And the pieces will be peer-reviewed, so please ensure that your name doesn't appear anywhere aside from on the cover page. All the written pieces must be double-spaced, 12-point font, and adhere to the APA formatting of the UBC plagiarism policy. The maximum word count will be 3,000 pages. And in recognition of the politics of language, the word Indigenous must be capitalized when referring to people or peoples. And our policy does not italicize non-English words, just because italicizing them serves to set them up as exotic. So please keep those criteria in mind while you're making your submissions.
Well, actually, Bev, the submission criteria has a maximum word count of 3,000 words, not pages. 3,000 words, please.
Right, yeah. So 300 words,
yeah,
not 300.
Yeah, we'll keep the limit to 3,000 words.
Yeah, absolutely. So the journal aims to bring visibility to the importance and value of Indigenous voices and studies in the academy, as well as beyond the academy. And so in that spirit, we will be privileging Indigenous people's submissions. But if you are non-Indigenous, you are totally encouraged to submit. We're just wanting to showcase Indigenous voices where possible. So that will be taken into consideration, but everybody is welcome to submit. And that also goes to sort of the fact that we're not just calling for FNIS students or First Nations and Endangered Languages students to submit to this journal. This is open up to all disciplines at UBC. So whether you're in the anthropology department, history, sociology, political science, English, whatever it is, if you're interested in Indigenous issues, you're writing about them, creating art about them, you're totally welcome to add your voices into the conversation and to submit. All right, so to finish it off, is there anything folks should be looking out for from the journal in the next few months?
Yeah, so besides our call for submissions, we're also going to be looking for some cover art and art for the website, which will be launching soon, and Bev's going to tell you how you can stay in touch with us.
Yeah, so we do have a Facebook page. The link for that would be facebook.com/Journal of First Peoples Writing, and we also have a Twitter, and our Twitter handle is at... It's at First Peoples. Yeah, so you can just look us up on Facebook. Our journal name is also called Hona Almos Chachils in Hunkaminam.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
No.
I could help you cross the street.
No.
Tired of a world of no when you have so much to give?
CITR and Discorder got you with an outfit for all that.
Volunteer Wednesdays are back in the CITR Lounge.
It's an open house for members like you who are looking to meet cool people and get into the station.
Join up, meet some folks, help some causes, or just hang the freak out.
At the CITR Discorder Lounge from 1 to 3 every Wednesday for food and good times.
Well, I gotta help you cross something.
We got a theory.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. We know how magnets work.
If magic is all we've ever known, then it's easy to miss what really goes on. But I've seen miracles in every way, and I see miracles every day.
You just heard Desperate Youth by Saintigold. It's 26 minutes after the hour. And for the second show topic of the day, I sat down with Michelle Nahaney about her board game Playing Post-Colonial, a decolonizing activity book for the woke and the weary. And here's what she had to say about it.
Okay. Hasquile, Michelle Nahaney, Quentin Snaw, Aslan Ohomeo, Squamish Oath Ohomeo. Good day, my name is Michelle Nahaney. I am a member of the Squamish Nation. I'm from the village of Aslan.
Perfect. And then what was the stimulus for your Playing Post-Colonial game?
Yeah, so it was really, I wanted to, the focus of my research is to take decolonizing practices into a very real neo-colonial contact zone applications. So how are we working together today? How are we doing it right? How are we doing it wrong? And I wanted to find ways to get those information out into the world.
That's cool. And then how did you come up with it? And what about the name, the full, like, elongated name?
Yeah, sure. So the name of the book is called Playing Postcolonial, a Decolonizing Activity Guide for the Woke and the Weary. And so it's definitely a loaded title in that I'm saying that we're not postcolonial. To yeah. say that this is postcolonial is play. And the other layer is that it's a playbook. So we can take these ideas, we're going to play with them in flashcards, we're going to play a board game, we're going to look at the new Indian Agent paper doll, we're going to reframe 10 Little Indians. And so through play, especially through my 8-foot square board game, is people get to just look at these ideas, issues, and see them in a different way.
And then what was the process of coming up with your game?
I mean, it was something, I guess the metaphor of the snakes and ladders kept coming to me as I was working with different people and trying to work through decolonizing ideas and show decolonization not as a linear process, but as this evolution, you know, where we get up and fall down, and this idea of being woke and weary, where you learn something, you get to reframe something, and then maybe you mess it up a little bit, and then you have to reframe it again, and sort of how that's how we learn as humans. And yeah. So taking decolonization and putting that into that human framework is really where the Seinolke and Chenchen Swai snakes and ladders came from.
What are some of your favorite squares on your game?
Well, I mean, of course, I'm an Indigenous designer, yeah. So, you know, that's, you know, definitely something that I've come across a long time is people try to ask me to create what they think is authentic Indigenous yeah. work, you know, and tell me as an Indigenous artist what that means. So it was fun to put that in. And then squares where I get to just acknowledge some of the things that my friends have gone through. So my elder, for example, you know, did a big presentation at Queen Elizabeth Theater, you know, wasn't given an honorarium and was kind of sloughed off to the side after she'd spent her gas money and time to go and present at this conference. And so I get to honor her pain and say publicly, it's not okay what happened, yeah. you know. And so nobody's name is on the squares. She knows it. She knows that's her. She, yeah. she loves it. But, you know, so I get to honor the pain too and say no publicly.
Yeah, that's so necessary too. Mm-hmm. And then what was meticulously planned about your game, and can you explain your process behind
yeah.
it?
I mean, the meticulous part would definitely be the embodiment of my culture. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm using Squamish language, I'm using Squamish epistemologies, So Chen Chen Stwai is our word for holding up each other, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a Squamish teaching, and so I needed to make sure that I expressed that properly, right? And so I did bring it to my elders, I brought it to my family, I made sure that people agreed that it was being presented properly, and then my Saint Elkai, which is the double-headed sea serpent, I did ask my uncle, who's an elder, to help me make sure that I got the drawing right, and so that it was a Squamish sea serpent, and yeah, so I feel like that was, to me, like that I wanted to do that properly.
Yeah, of course. And then what about the flashcards? How would you say they tie into your game?
Yeah, so the flashcards actually were designed by my daughter, Paisley Evenahaney, and she worked with me on an event. We did a talk called Emma Talks, okay. And so I curated an event called Squamish Matriarchy.
Okay.
Yeah, and I knew that I was going to present my board game there, and I asked her to contribute to the activity book. And so she wanted to work with the Ten Little Indians song and to create these flashcards with the Ten Little Indians and then use, you know, very contemporary ideas, you know, of, that we would allow or that we would frame the Little Indians with the power to speak for their own agency.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's really cool. And then how have you seen this game open up a dialogue about representation and resurgence? And
yeah, it's really great. I mean, I have all kinds of conversations with the game because it's fun, because it's so pretty, because it's so different that, you know, there's some very difficult parts in the game. But the game also allows for the human error that you can start over and you can slide back down and you can do it again. And so I find people are more willing to talk about, you know, maybe some of the neocolonial mistakes that they make, you know, and learn from them.
That's really good. Have you seen it, like, firsthand? Have you seen somebody realize that in front of you and be like, change their mind?
I think so, yeah. It's definitely, like, I've done a few presentations where I'm playing in the 8-foot game, you know, with a settler and then having, you know, an intense conversation about something, but also in this fun way because we're both standing in the middle of this 8-foot board game, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, well, I really like the way that you said that, you know, and they can see that they can slide down the saying okay, but they can come back up. So actually, yeah, I've had some good intense conversations.
Against this rock, I catch your fugitive eyes. before I turn and lay my head down. I'm thinking of her escaping through these spruce, walking across these rocks, walking over this moss. I'm thinking of her escaping past stolen, walking across loss, walking over shame, holding fire in her heart, like all her descendants so effortlessly do. Under, you're always light.
You just heard Under You're Always Light by Leanne Simpson. For the third show topic of today, I sat down with collective member Madison Singh about her heritage as a Cree slash East Indian person. Here's what she had to say.
How do you reconcile appearance versus identity?
Yeah, so it's a bit hard looking, like, not looking Indigenous. And I say, like, Indigenous.
With air quotes.
With air quotes. And identifying as Indigenous. And it's always seems like it's such a shock to people when I do tell them that I'm also Native. And it's kind of weird because on my, like, Indigenous side, my family says that I look East Indian. And on my East Indian side, they say that I look Native.
And what do you say to them both?
I say, cool, I guess. I don't know.
Thanks,
I don't
know what
to say. Thanks.
Yeah. And then what about being a mixed person and controlling your own identity instead of having others control it for you?
Yeah, so growing up, I kind of came to the realization that, like, it would have been easier to just, like, enthrall myself into one side of my identity because it'd be easier to... I guess
yeah, it's easier
about.
To identify as one instead of like I have two. I have to learn everything about all of them now.
Yeah, it is hard. So I thought it would be an easy way out, but I don't feel comfortable closing a whole side of my identity off to myself because I come from two like very rich cultures. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be exposed to both of them.
And it's hard when your family's like, why are you not doing these things that we want you to do? And you're like, I'm trying to learn so many things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you find that?
Yeah, I kind of do. Like, growing up, I tried to learn my East Indian language, which is Punjabi.
Yeah.
And I feel like every summer I would just visit my dad's family and, like, I would try to learn it, but it would always get lost over the years.
Yeah.
And then I'd come back the summer and I'd try to learn it again, but
and you'd get lost again. Yeah. That's fair. Do you have problems redefining your own identity instead of, like, having...
I do, but I'm starting...
How do you deal with that? What do you do?
I'm starting to realize that, like, it doesn't matter if, like, people don't see me as Indigenous or if people don't see me as fully East Indian. Mm-hmm. I know, like, who I am inside, and I identify as both of these things.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take it upon myself to learn more about my cultures.
Mm-hmm. That's really neat. How do you share knowledge with one side versus the other side? And then how are you able to make them receptive mm-hmm. to this knowledge?
So I talk to my, like, native side about my East Indian culture, and, like, it's pretty, like, good with that. But my East Indian side, we haven't really, like, talked about my indigeneity or my experience as an Indigenous person.
Yeah.
Until recently. Like, I would say they're pretty ignorant to a lot of the issues and experiences we have as Indigenous people. But they're starting to, like, open up a dialogue and actually have conversations with me about certain things.
Do you have problems with people being, like, or with people telling you that you don't look a certain way? Like, you don't look Native enough, or you don't look East Indian enough? Because I know that I have problems with that, where people tell me that I look like I'm from a white, tanned country, so, like, Spain. Mm-hmm. Or, like, Italy. And, like, I acknowledge that they're still, like, they still face some sort of oppression because they're not completely white, but they're just not white in the summer when it's super dark. Do you mm-hmm. find you have problems with that?
I guess it's a bit different for me because I'm not, like, white passing or something like that.
Yeah.
But I do feel like it's a bit, like, it's kind of feeling like you have to prove your identity to somebody just because you don't look like it on the outside.
Yeah.
Because, like, identity is so much more than just appearances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because okay. I know that you face different oppressions than I face as a, like, mm-hmm. your skin tone looks different than mine. Mm-hmm. And, like, you have two different cultures, and I have, like, one, and then German, which is, like, not mm-hmm. really a culture in Canada. There's, like, none of us.
Yeah, so a part of people not seeing you as Indigenous when you identify as Indigenous, I feel like a part of that is it kind of hurts a bit more when it's coming from an Indigenous person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of like I see it a little bit as lateral violence.
Yeah.
Like, a colonial way of thinking about identity is, like, blood quantum mm-hmm. and, like,
oh, totally. Percentage. Blood quantum is totally a colonial concept.
Because,
mm-hmm. like, what is, we don't care. We're matrilineal. Whatever your mom is, that's what you would be. Mm-hmm. And, like, now we're in a time where we can both embrace our, it's a nuanced acceptance of cultural, of mm-hmm. culture. And that's what's great about where we're living now. But, like, it's totally a colonial concept.
Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to realize that, like, yeah, I am Indigenous, and I can identify as Indigenous, and I can live as an Indigenous person.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cool. I feel like that too, but did you ever have problems? Like, did you grow up on a res?
I didn't grow up on the res.
Did you have problems where people are like, you don't look Indigenous, and you didn't grow up on the res, so, like, you're not really Native. Like, you're an urban Native. You're fake.
I don't think I've had that happened to me, but, like, there was one time where I lived for a few months in my mom's Indigenous community, which is in Fort Chipewyan.
Yeah.
And I was super out of place.
Yeah.
Like, I was really out of place. I was, like, considered a nerd or, like, a geek.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've always been, like, into, like, math and science and, like, academics.
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of my classmates, that wasn't a lot of their priorities.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of, like, outsider.
And there's also problems with, like, I find this a lot specifically, like, on the res, where, like, people don't consider you Native if you, like, don't do these certain things. So, like, if you don't get drunk, but then, like, the rest of society looks down on you if you get drunk, and same mm-hmm. thing with drugs. And they're like,
mm-hmm.
what is being Native? Can you yeah. isn't it just an identity?
Yeah, I think it is an identity, and it's about who you carry yourself as, who you, like, what your values are, what your beliefs are.
Yeah.
Like, your family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so, too, especially with, like, matrilineality. Did you have problems with that? Matrilineality, where, like, you are what your mom is?
Yeah, yeah. So I was raised by my mom. My mom was a single parent.
Yeah.
And so, like, I am East Indian, but it's kind of weird because I look East Indian, but I don't practice the same cultures, and I wasn't raised in, like, their traditional lifestyles. Yeah. So I don't really relate to a lot of the experiences as an East Indian person, and I relate more to the experiences as a Native person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then there's also, like, experiences as a Native person that you've, like, never had, and the people mm-hmm. are like, you're fake, and you're like, but I'm not, actually, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like growing up in the North?
Yeah, it was nice. I liked it a lot better than living in Southern Alberta.
That's fun. Like Calgary?
Like further south.
Yeah.
You're from the North too, right?
Not like from the North, but I was born in Edmonton, but my mom was born in Inuvik.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I know that it's different not mm-hmm. being from there, but I went up there and it's really lovely. I really like it up there, but it's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different way of life. And also, I learned so much about my Gwich'in culture when I was there. Previously, I had mainly identified as Inuit because that's what my mom identified as. Like, she ran the Edmonton Inuit Cultural Society. It was a little different. Mm-hmm. And like Gwich'in and Inuvialuit are kind of similar, but they're also still different because Gwich'in is basically like Northern Dene and Inuvialuit is a type of Inuit, so there are different practices and traditions. Growing up, I just kind of thought they were all the same
because mm-hmm.
there was like no difference. But yeah. Yeah, so thanks for that, Madison. Now we have a little video made by someone named Luke that articulates their feelings about their heritage.
When I was younger, I didn't understand my heritage. I had a mom and a dad, and that was it. Nothing more to it. All I'd ever known and heard was that I was Native. So there I went, labeling myself without even understanding what that meant. I was a youngin', I didn't know any better. But then came a day where little old Luke, that's me by the way, came to a conflicting realization. Those who held that same label supposed I was a poser, that I wasn't Native because I was too white. I looked at the back of my hands and up my arm because I was confused. In my head was a battlefield, questions storming in like bombardments raining from above. And with each boom and blast, I felt as if my body was no longer mine. As if I've been walking in some other shoes my entire life. As if the blood coursing through my veins didn't belong to me. So there I stood, dazed, blankly facing a trio of kids that couldn't understand. A war flashed in my mind, completely devastating me and leaving my body paralyzed from the ambiguous notion that I was not who I was led to believe. Native. I came home and told my mother what happened at school that day, and she shook her head. She was saddened to hear that because her son had come into the canvas we call Earth as a splash between white and brown, he's been teased and denied his identity. This canvas we call Earth? Where despite the many colors and shades that appear all throughout, some colors, more than others, are getting blotted out and criticized for being something they can't change. But like the winds in a summer breeze, he remains headstrong. With the support of his family, he pushes forward, continuing to identify as Native. Despite acknowledging and truthfully explaining his mixed background he holds, there are still those that view him with disapproval. They would say things like, "You haven't grown up on the res," or "You can't even say one thing in your language." And who am I to prove them wrong? They're right in those aspects. No, I haven't grown up on a reservation. And no, I don't know how to say anything in my language. Yet. You tease a baby bird before it has learned to fly because you assume it never will. Like the idea of wanting to learn is unrealistic, unimaginable, unachievable, unbelievable. Just because I haven't grown up on a res doesn't mean it's too late to visit and learn from the elders, to connect with all my family and relatives that I haven't met, and to learn of all these traditional practices I've always wanted to explore. To learn how to fish, how to hunt, to sail over this ocean of tradition and culture in a canoe with my sisters and brother, all of us lowering our hands and feeling the cold waters as we float over it. And just because I haven't traversed that entire ocean doesn't mean I've only dipped my toe in. Lend me your drum and ask me to sing the song of the raven, the song of the eagle. I'll wail so that the electricity from my lungs permeates through the room like the air you breathe, so that you may listen and feel my passion from head to toe. I'll don my regalia that was passed down to me from my father, and I'll dance like my crest, the wolf, amidst the moonlit forest with my father's button blanket trailing as my tail. The very same regalia that my grandmother made for my father. The very same regalia that I will pass down to my son when he becomes ready to embrace his dad's heritage. A Tsimshian, Namgis, and white youth. I'll howl to the moon as loud as I can so I'm not left unheard. I hope you learn from this creative piece I've brought to you and to not judge those who know who they are. Do not assume, based on the appearance of an individual, their identity. Just place yourself in the same situation. Who knows you better than yourself?
Thank you so much for that, Luke. Now we have our unseated events listing. Here's where we highlight Indigenous relevant events that you might be interested in attending. The first one that we have today is Culture is Healing Beating Night on December 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. at 205-568 Seymour Street, Vancouver. One way that we can take care of ourselves and communities is through learning and sharing our traditional teachings. This is a space where Indigenous youth can come together to share our culture and have a great discussion about things like holistic well-being, harm reduction, sexuality, sexual health, HIV, and hepatitis C. This event is only for Indigenous youth up to age 29, but it is within those restrictions, it is an inclusive space for all gender, sexualities, and abilities. Do you want to read the second one, Melissa?
Yeah. In the new year, everyone is welcome to the Full Circle Society's annual Talking Stick Festival powwow. This one-day powwow is being held at the Roundhouse Community Center on February 24th, 2018. The Roundhouse Community Center is at 181 Roundhouse Mews, Vancouver, BC. Talking Stick is Western Canada's premier Indigenous performing arts festival and will be featuring lots of dancing, song, and powwow culture.
There is a final screening of Cessnam, The City Before the City, at the Van City Theatre on December 13th. So that is 2 days from now. And this event is Pay What You Can, which is fantastic. Cessnam, The City Before the City commemorates 5 years since the resolution of a dramatic and compelling moment in the history of this space, now known as Metropolitan Vancouver. In late 2011, Musqueam First Nation learned that a 108-unit condo development was being planned at one of their ancestral village sites without prior consultation with the nation. This ancient site dating back over 4,000 years has always been known to Musqueam as Cessnam, but has commonly been referred to as the Eburn Midden, Marple Midden, and Great Fraser Midden, and DHRS-1. The Vancouver Film Center kindly gave unseated airwaves a few free tickets, so stay posted for a blog post review coming up soon.
And we have one more film screening as well, Birth of a Family. Removed from their young Dene mother's care as part of Canada's infamous 60s scoop, Betty Ann, Esther, Rosalie, and Ben were four of the 20,000 children, Indigenous children, taken from their families between 1955 and 1985 to be either adopted into white families or to live in foster care. As the four siblings piece together their shared history, their connection deepens, bringing laughter with it, and their family begins to take shape. The screening will be taking place on January 24th, 2018, at 7 p.m. at Javad Mawafgania Cinema, Gold Corp Center for the Arts, 149 West Hastings Street.
Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Vanessa and Michelle Nahaney for being guests on today's show. And thank you to Madison for sharing her experience as a mixed person. Thank you to Melissa for interviewing Vanessa. And we would like to thank our sponsors, NORAD Electric and Decolonizing Water. The next show you'll hear is Synchronicity. My name is Autumn Schnell, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM.